Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Renee Tondelli.
John,
I know that
clip. That's from Deepwater Horizon.
I know, and I thought she's probably sick of hearing that, but I decided.
Oh no!
I decided to play it anyway. Can you describe what you did on Deepwater Horizon that got you an Oscar nomination?
Well, every show that I do, including that one, even more so on that one. Basically, 95% of what you hear in a film is created after the movie has been shot.
Right.
So Deepwater Horizon, for example, was shot in a Six Flags parking lot,
what?
A defunct Six Flags parking lot in New Orleans that had, it's so creepy, when I came to drive on the set, it said, closed for the storm. And that was Katrina, and it never opened again.
Wow.
And they built this entire set on the lot. And every morning they'd have the alligator wranglers and the wild pigs and boars. They'd have to go send somebody in to collect them before we could come up because the swamp had taken over. But as far as the sound on the film goes, it all had to be recreated because there was no actionable oil rig.
Well, I knew you were coming on, and there's something else that we're going to talk about. But I watched it again, and I was thinking exactly what you're saying, because the visual is changing. You know, it's edited. It's moving at a certain pace. But the audio sometimes is a continuous sound underneath the edited scenes. And obviously, that's something that you do, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was done. It was so complicated, that film, because first of all, you had to create the water, you know, the underwater, so that you could see that the pipe was going to crack and
right.
The bubbles were coming up. So there was the whole element of impending doom happening. Then there was the actual oil rig itself inside the oil rig. So there were all these. Every time you walked by a hallway, you had to hear somebody. You had to hear something. There were PAs going up. There were big machineries going on. Then you went up on top of the oil rig where a lot of it was shot too. And you had to have all these actual oil rig sounds, big, heavy machinery, people screaming, yelling across. I mean, it was many, many layers.
Go ahead.
No.
So you have to find these sounds?
Yeah, well, we basically make a lot of them.
Out of what?
You'd be surprised.
I know. That's what I want to know.
The sound we do. There's a thing called Foley. Okay, basically, to quickly cue your listeners in on what a sound scape is on a film. It's consisted of dialogue, sound effects. Foley, which is the people that go in the stage, and also we do that too. You actually go in a stage, you bring in a bunch of stuff. Like the sound supervisor that worked with me wrecked his back because he kept hauling in all these big pieces of metal on the sound stage. And then you bang them and lift them and drop them, and you do all this kind of, and you record them all. And then you have people that walk, do all the feet for you every time. Like if you're walking on gravel, we have gravel pits. And if you're walking on water, you're not walking on water, but
right.
If there's water,
right.
You have a water pool. And then you recreate all of these sounds really from scratch. And then you have to create the ambience. You know, you have to create the room tones and the backgrounds that go on, the birds and the winds and the trees and all of that level. And then there is so it's Foley effects, dialogues, and music. And you know, it takes a village.
I guess so. How long did you work on that movie?
That movie was long. It went on for 8 months, 9 months.
Yeah.
And I also started early on it because I went down to the set. See, we actually hired The director actually hired all of the crew that worked on the film, actual oil rig guys.
Right.
He said, I don't want some, you know, Hollywood guy saying, hey, give me that wrench over there. You know, he really wanted like these bad, all, you know, these guys were just seeped in oil, you know.
Right.
And so I had to go down and get and record them all on the set with their colloquial, with their language, you know, because everybody, as you know, has a language. Like if you were talking in radio and said, hey, you know, we're going to, what's a good thing? I forgot all my radio date moments, but, which I don't know if anybody knows that I used to be John's, board tech. That was my first career, which was very fun.
That was a lot of fun. But
you have your own language. So I needed these guys to do that. So I went down with a bunch of microphones and a bunch of guys, and we all sat around on different parts of the oil rig and had them yell out and say things and talk to each other all in their own lingo. So I did that while they were still shooting. It was all just, you know, we had to make it as real as possible because there was nothing real shot, you know?
Yeah. And even, okay, moving away from Deepwater Horizon, you also worked on the latest Mary Poppins movie, just to go to a completely different type of film. And I saw you doing some publicity for that. I saw some, you know, conversations with the sound people.
Yeah, we all have to go out there at that time, you know.
So that's got to be a completely different set of working.
Oh, Mary Poppins?
Yeah.
Or what I have to do?
No, Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins was amazing. I mean, when you do a musical, here's the thing about what I do. Someone mentioned it, and they're absolutely right. I basically start a small business every time I start a new movie, right? Because I have a new boss, I have a new idea, a new job to do, a new crew, a new location. And so each one is like, okay, like I went from Chicago 7, I worked on Borat, you know, the subsequent movie. And then you go and work on, you know, I'm working on Aaron Sorkin's film right now about the Ricardos. And then, you know, so you're constantly changing through these elements, and musicals are their own animal.
Yeah.
You know,
it gotta be,
they have a whole different set of skill set that you need for that.
When did you decide to do this? Cause I remember your going away party, going to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about that. But you made this decision to follow this type of work. What, I mean, it's amazing what you're doing. And I just, how did you make the trip? What made you decide to do this?
Well, funnily enough, you know, I mean, I always loved film. And it'll tie in with the next thing you're going to ask me about the documentary. But I was just enamored with foreign films. I just looked at those and went, and if, even before that, my father is a musician, and he would come home at 3 in the morning, you know, from a gig, and he'd go come in and wake me up, and he'd go, I have some pizza and hot dogs, you know, and there's a great movie on, you want to come? And everybody was like, oh, get away from me, you know, it's 3 in the morning, hot dogs. And I would jump out of bed.
Yes, you would.
And go sit with him and watch all these great black and white movies. And we would talk movies, you know, from when I was a little kid. So I was always fascinated with doing movies. And then I wanted to be a director, and I ended up doing, you know, I worked at radio, so I really learned how to tell stories through sound. It was a huge, huge learning experience for me, John.
I'll bet.
You know, we would create these hour-long shows on Sunday, right, when you guys all went off, and it was just we had to play what they call, you know, these shows. But I was like, why do we have to make them boring? Let's make them really interesting. So I would do sound effects and music, and we would cut stuff, and Maggie Brock and I were like, we would have a blast, right?
That's it. Right.
Yeah. So we really made it fun, and we made little movies, like these little hour long movies on Sunday that probably no one ever heard because it was at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. But We did. So I did that, and then I went to film school while I was going to WLS. And it was when Columbia first started. My God, it was nothing but a loft, a hallway, a cup. You got, like, they gave you a Bolex, which was the camera you used at the time, and said, go out, shoot movies. And that's where we really learned, like, guerrilla style. But anyway, then I thought, oh, I'm going to be a director. This is perfect. And so I came out to LA and thinking, okay, I'm here, ready. I'm ready to be a director. I was like, what? I mean, it was such a hard job to get into. It still is. Anyway, I went because I needed to get, my husband came out, my ex-husband, as you might know, we came out and he got fired right away. And I now had just ripped apart my house. I bought a house out here, which was no small feat, ripped it apart. We had no money. And I went, oh, great. Now I have to immediately find a job. So a friend of mine said, I'm working down at Canon Films. Why don't you come down with me and see if you can get a job? So I went down there, and the head guy said to me, can you start right now? Somebody just quit.
Wow.
Classic, you know?
Yeah.
And I went, sure. And so that's what happened, you know, and I ended up doing it, working in sound, and I ended up more on, my bent is more dialogue driven, just because I like to work with the actors and the directors and story and all that stuff. So that's how that happened.
Well, we're talking to Renee Tondelli, and we're going to take a break and come back and talk about a new documentary. But I just want to set up the documentary with what you see on the screen before. I think it's the first thing, and this is it. Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square hole, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify them, or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. And that was a quote from Steve Jobs, and we'll tell you what that movie is when we come back on 720 WGN. Renee Tondelli, if you've just tuned in, she's a supervising sound editor, has worked on The Passion of the Christ, Memories of the Geisha, Django Unchained, Lone Survivor, American Hustle, Into the Woods, on and on and on. But you didn't work on this one, did you? Renee? Oops, I'm sorry.
Ironically,
I didn't have the switch on. Sorry. You didn't work on this one, did you?
No.
No.
Ironically, I did not.
I know.
We had nothing to do with it. isn't that funny?
Yes, it is. Because you sent an email out. I got this email from you telling me about this. No. No?
Yes, no, we did. No, but I'm just saying, as far as the making, production of it.
Yeah.
It was Ira, who is someone that Eddie's father, who worked with my husband Ed's father, and he said, I want to make this film about your dad. And Ed was like, really? Okay, you know. And he said, can I interview you and your brother and your mom? And then he went ahead and interviewed everyone that knew him, and he was such a character.
Oh boy.
That this movie, and the interesting thing about this documentary, if you see it, and you probably didn't even think about it, John, but there's no film of him. And there's one sound clip.
First of all, I have to tell people, the movie is called Searching for Mr. Rugoff, and it's available now via the Music Box Virtual Cinema. And you're going to watch this movie, and you're going to realize that you have participated in everything that this man has done, but you've never heard of him. I mean, it's insane. I mean, we're talking Gimme Shelter and... oh my God. Putney Swope and just every movie that I would used to
go to.
Monty Python.
He was so great. Like he was the first distributor, I think, in America who brought foreign and independent films to the theater.
Yeah.
And he also had really cool theaters in New York that were really like one-off. They were events. People would go there and stand in line for hours to get in and see things, you know, and certain directors would only show their movies at his theater.
Mel Brooks.
Woody Allen.
Mel Brooks said, I'm not going to, it's got to be one of his theaters that I'm going to show the films at. I mean,
yeah,
it's insane.
Woody Allen would only do the Beekman.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, you know, it was this like good luck charm they had.
Well, so, you know, a lot of people probably saw the movie MASH, and it has there was great advertising. This guy had unbelievably creative mind for images to advertise the film. So MASH has these two fingers lifted up, right? And the hand.
The peace sign.
Yeah, the peace sign. Yeah. That's taken from Putney Swope, which has a same hand, only there's only one finger up. It's not really a finger, but it's supposed to be a finger. You know what I'm saying?
The middle one.
Yeah. And oh God, I only got a minute, Renee. Jeez, we gotta do this again sometime. Seriously.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It just a quick wrap up on that though, John. Yeah. I think I'm so happy you went because it really makes you realize that how he did influence the film business.
It's insane.
I mean, the film world.
World.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we're talking major filmmakers internationally. And I've
Truffaut
never heard of
him. And yes. Yeah, he won an Academy Award for a foreign film, which was State of Siege, which never, or maybe it was Z. I'm sorry. It was
Z.
Which was never done. They never had a foreign film that ever won an award. So anyway, we don't have enough time.
Yeah,
I hope I was able to give some light onto it.
Searching for Mr. Rugoff. If you're interested in movies at all, you want to see this. Available now via Music Box Virtual Cinema at musicboxtheater.com. Thanks, Renee. Hope to talk to you
again real soon. Always lovely.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Have a good
talk soon.
Right? Renee Tondelli. Oh, we've got stories.